With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast, Extra Bits. This is our little extra gift for you podcast subscribers. This week, it's our Badass Balls Ups with me, Harriet Minter, Emma Sexton and Natalie Campbell. And we're also joined by the amazing Sophia Money Coutts, author and journalist. We'll be talking about whether or not we should get Botox and just how to overcome loneliness.
One, two, three, four!
I don't know about you, but I love a good summer read, particularly a good bit of classic chick lit. And in the studio, we have the author of probably the summer read, the plus one, Sophia Money Coutts. It's so lovely to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So I read your book when I was on holiday in Portugal.
Yes. Great. Okay, perfect.
And I loved it. I tore through it in about a day. Yeah. So good. And I loved that it was just a good classic summer holiday read. Was that what you were trying to do?
Yes, I was never going to write War and Peace. And I thought, yeah, and I wasn't aiming to write anything that was going to win the Booker Prize. So I really just wanted to write a book that made women laugh and women read it and think at particular scenes, oh yeah, that's true, that's a thing, that happens. So that was my goal, really.
So there is one particular scene. We're going to have to talk about it.
Okay, which one?
It is sort of early on in the book when she meets our lovely single heroine meets, a sort of a man that at a party. She meets him at a party. She's a friend of a friend. She's like, am I attracted to you? I don't know. Maybe I am. I suppose I could be. And then you have a few drinks and you're like, well, I might as well be. Yeah. There's no one else here to be attracted to.
You could be the one. You don't know.
You don't know. And then you kind of go back home with them and you think it's all going really well. And it's not.
No.
It's sexually in favour of one side rather than the other one.
Totally.
The wrong side, quite frankly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that, which I just really resonated with me, because we've all been there.
Yeah.
Was a lot of it drawing on kind of your experiences, your friends' experiences. Yeah. Have your friends been written in and are they picking out their stories?
I'm getting WhatsApps from friends at the moment about the book, and everyone I'm a bit like, oh God, I wonder if she's spotted herself. No, obviously it's not based on anyone in real life, and it's fictional. So yes, there were experiences in there, kind of such as the Callum one, which either myself or friends might have gone through. So yes, elements are drawn from real life, but not all of it. It's fiction.
And it's also the other thing I loved about it is stepping into this sort of unknown world, because Heron goes in and starts dating a member of the British aristocracy, like a proper old school proper one, with a Land Rover and a dog,
castle and all of that.
You used to work for Tatler, the magazine. I love Tatler.
Oh, do you?
I have a subscription.
Great.
For the British aristocracy. Were you kind of modelling it on your experiences there?
Yes, I worked at Tatler for 5 years and I loved it. It was, I always say this to people, in the best possible way, it was like being at a girls' boarding school. We were all mates. I remember coming in once having just broken up with an ex-boyfriend and I sobbed for about 2 weeks, and people would take it in turns to come and sit by my desk with tissues and like, your turn now, go and sit with it. You know, it was really cosy like that. But yeah, there were all these sort of extraordinary things, like interviews and home shoots that I got sent on, and I just didn't want to waste any of that. There's all this material and all these fascinating eccentric characters that do still exist, like it's sort of the 19th century in certain pockets of the country. And so I just thought, I want to use some of that, because it's kind of brilliant material. So that's what I wanted to pack in there.
Do you need any like formal training to write a fiction book? Because I always feel like a non-fiction book, I feel like that's a standard thing that you'd be able to write and edit. Mm. But I feel like when you're writing fiction, had you got some knowledge of writing? Are we able to, because I feel like, aren't there things about like story arcs and protagonists and I don't
we know
like...
this. It was about Pret and coffee. Yeah. But...
yeah, as I said, yeah. Actually, yeah, you guys were at my launch party this week and I said it was mostly written in pret-a-manger before going into work at Tatler. No, I mean, I literally did sit down and just start writing, which I guess is why I started with a posh magazine, because that was what I knew.
Yeah.
And then sort of, I think the sort of storytelling muscle in your head is a muscle. And I think, you know, when we're little, we all write stories. Mm. Oh, the princess in the castle rescued by the, you know, whoever, handsome prince. And we grow up and I think we lose that a bit. And I don't know whether it's, you know, growing up or the education system or whatever, it just gets beaten out of us, or a lot of us anyway. So when I came to, you know, start trying to write a fictional novel, I remember opening my laptop and being a bit like, oh, can't think of anything. Scary blank Word document. And you think, what am I going to write? So, and I think that's true. A lot of people's first novels tend to be quite autobiographical. But what's really interesting is now I'm writing my second one, which is due really soon. It's completely different. And I feel like I've exercised that storytelling muscle, a bit like, you know, your biceps in the gym or something. Yeah. And because I've worked it a little bit for this one, and will work it harder for the next one, and hopefully continue to do so, I notice stuff much more now. So I'm much more observational, you know, in the street or in, you know, anywhere that I am, or anything that I hear or read or listen to, it sparks that muscle in my head somewhere. And I go, aha. Useful.
But are your friends now scared of talking to you?
Yeah.
They're like, will this end up somewhere in a book?
Well,
can this be off the record?
Yeah, in fact, I saw my friend Katie just before coming here and what was she talking about? Oh yeah, we were talking about nipple hairs. And she was like, oh my God, I can't talk to you about anything because it's going to get put in your next book.
Or you're going to say it on the radio.
Or I'm going to out her on the radio. It's fine. She was going off to have pizza. She won't be listening.
But that's the danger. Everything becomes content for the
Nora Ephron's everything is copy.
This is very, very true. And so to get to this place where you managed to finish a book, were there lots of directions of travel? Could this have gone anywhere at certain points, or did you always know, and I don't want to ruin the end, but did you always know how it was going to end?
Can't give it away. I knew fairly early
on. Well, I'm happy to give it away. I'm sure you don't want to give it away because you want people to go and read it and find out
please
for themselves
read it, please
what
buy
happened.
It. I knew the ending fairly early on. I wanted to have something to write to. And actually, weirdly, in the past 2 days, I've just written the ending of book two. I think it helps. I've done it a bit like a puzzle, both books. I've sort of done the framework and the outside, and then I start filling in the middle bits, which I'm sure is really unscientific. I'm sure proper writers don't do that at all, and they write much more scientifically. I think it helps if you have an ending to know where you're going to end up. Otherwise, you're just sort of writing on that scary blank Word document a bit blindly. Mm. So yes, I did. And again, I don't want to give a spoiler. I was going to talk about sort of happy endings or not happy endings.
My next question was going to be, do you think there always has to be a happy ending? Because it starts, I think we can say how it starts, and you talk about the whole you blame Sense and Sensibility for a lot.
I really do, yeah.
Does there always have to be a happy ending?
I wasn't sure actually with this one. I had a conversation with Becky, my agent, really early on about a different ending, and she was the one who said, I think for this one, if we can we try and have a sort of happy, traditionally sort of happy ending? And I did have moments before the book came out. I mean, I've been incredibly neurotic for the past 2 months worrying about it. My poor boyfriend's had to put up with me sort of having nightmares and talking about it all the time. And I've had moments where I've worried that it's not very sort of 2018 or 21st century or feminist to write a sort of traditional or a love story with a sort of happy ending in a way. I'm trying to be very vague to keep, you know, the ending a bit vague. And because there's lots of sort of, you know, brilliant, dystopian sort of feminist books coming out this summer. And I was like, oh God, am I really old fashioned and outdated because I've written this? But then weirdly, what really calmed me down was watching, have you guys seen The Greatest Showman?
Oh, but everyone raves about it.
So I saw it on a flight, and I'm not trying to say in any way that the massive hit film Greatest Showman is in any way comparable, or my book is in any way comparable to that. But it's a really lovely old-fashioned story, and I saw it on a flight. And you know, when you're on a long-distance flight, you're like, oh, when are we going to land? I've been on here for weeks. And it really cheered me up. And I, as soon as I landed, I downloaded the Spotify soundtrack, and it just made me really happy. And I thought, actually, I think there is something in Harriet, like you saying, a sort of escapist, old-fashioned, you know, lovely chicklet. I think we shouldn't really be ashamed of sort of saying that these days.
Yeah, and I've read books before, and it was the one where it had a like awful ending, and I was literally in floods of tears. It's like, that's one day.
Yeah. The film with I've forgotten, but
I'm kind of with you, Sophie. I kind of feel like, especially today's modern world, you just want a little bit of happiness.
That's the thing, a bit of a laugh as well. Hopefully that's what people will find reading it.
And I often think women are sort of denigrated for writing what we call chick lit, you know, that it's sort of written off as therefore not very good book.
Yeah, lowbrow sort of
French.
Well, yeah. It really annoys me. In fact, Marianne Keyes addresses this amazingly in her Desert Island Discs. You'll listen to it. And Kirsty says, you know, what would you say to people who think it's popular, you know, sort of say it's popular sniffily. And she goes, I can't do the Irish accent. She goes, well, it's popular. And she's sold, you know, I mean, millions of books. Yeah. So, like, who's laughing, really?
Yeah, exactly. It's well known that I don't read fiction books. Mm. But all of the fiction books that I have read and I remember are chick lit.
One
of my favourite books was this book called by Jane Green called Mr. Maybe. Mm. I mean, again, I read it in a day. Yeah. It made me laugh. Yeah. I was on a beach. It's perfect. I did not want dystopian, you know, what happens. I don't need a thriller. I don't need anyone to die. Yeah. It is in, unless it's part of the story and it's a lovely story.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but, you know, murders. I'm not into that sort of, I just can't. Yeah. I know what my limits are.
Yeah.
And this, for me, is that perfect place of escapism. It's what I enjoy, and I can visualize really well.
Yeah,
and there's a place for that sort of storytelling, and I think everyone's sort of moved into it. Must be this sort of three series Gone Girl. Is it Gone Girl type?
Gone Girl was the one.
Or the dragon tattoo things.
Oh, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
All of that.
It's a lot, but along the lines.
I know,
yeah.
But I mean, it's just, this is, see, I don't read these books. It's
fewer Labradors than those,
isn't it? It's a lot for my brain.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't think we should beat ourselves up about, you know, reading a book that just is nice and makes us laugh, you know. Yeah.
But it's enjoyable. That is just, for me, enjoyable. That is the bottom line.
Yeah, and you can get into bed and be like, oh, I'm not struggling to reach the end of a really complicated sentence.
Exactly. Yeah.
Also, you know, actually, it doesn't matter if your eyes do close halfway through, because you'll be able to pick it up and you know what's going on. You're okay.
Yeah.
Sophia, how, you said you're writing your second book.
Yes.
How is that process going, and how is it different from the first one?
Well, it's very different, like, as I said, because my sort of muscle in my head, I think, is being exercised a bit. So I'm finding it easier to think of storylines, and I spent all of yesterday writing the last scene and really thinking about characters in more detail. There's a very specific theme to book two that I'm slightly keeping under wraps in a really annoying way, basically because I don't want anyone else to do it. But I've got the release date already for next year, so my publisher emailed me a couple of weeks ago and said, right, next year, here we go, August again, 2019. So it's like,
Great.
Better get on with it. So yeah, the deadline's end of November, so I've sort of got to hurry up. But I quite like that. Having been a journalist anyway, you know, we can only work to deadlines, right? We have to have that breathing down the back of our necks, and then we'll get on with it.
Pretty good that you've got a second book deal already.
Well, I think sometimes that happens with novelists. Yeah, it was so exciting. God, the day that I got the call from Becky last September saying that was a real red letter day. But then it felt like I had about a year and a half, or actually, yeah, nearly, yeah, you know, a year, just over a year to write it. I was like, well, that's fine. I'm going to manage it. I'm going to go freelance. Got loads of time to write the second book. And then we get to now, and I'm like, right, okay. End of November is really quite soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I keep refreshing the word count on my laptop. I'm like, oh, no, that's not enough. It's a really short novella, the next one.
But can I add that the character has a best friend called Natalie, who's like absolutely badass and gets her out of all of the problems, assuming that it is centered around
inspired by you.
Yeah, exactly.
Undoubtedly.
100%.
tattoos and maybe head.
Maybe.
Do you find people doing that? So you've had people who are like, oh, no, don't put, I'm not telling you, so don't put it in the book.
Yeah.
Do you have the opposite, which is people being like, oh, I'm telling you this really interesting story, and if you want to use it.
Yes, I have a few friends who are like, oh, please name a character that. Please name a character that. I think Julian Fellowes has auctioned names before for Downton and for charity, and that's, he's got loads of money for, you know, obviously to have some rich American say, yes, I'd like to be the sort of underfootman in Downton Abbey. Hilarious idea.
It's a way forward.
This is obviously your first book. If you were giving a couple of key tips to first-time authors, what would they be?
One, and I've heard this said a lot by writers, and it's really annoying, but it is just sit down and write. Like, I know when, you know, as I talked about it, that scary blank Word document, just do it, like write something. What I've been doing actually recently, which sounds fairly basic, but I found it really helpful, is when I did the audio version for the Plus One, reading it out loud, it took 3 days. It was a really useful exercise. And I realized I used the same expressions to describe people's sort of faces. And there's a lot of leaning forward in chairs and leaning back in chairs. And that seems to be one of my main sort of descriptions. And so what I've been doing at the moment is sitting on trains or in train stations or in Pret again or in airports, and just trying to be subtle, but looking around me and describing people around me. And I found that really helpful, because it's just, I'm trying to be as observant and pick up tiny little details. I was sitting in Pret in High Street, Ken, the other day, and there was a man who was chewing on a sandwich, and his moustache was sort of rippling across his mouth as he ate, like a wave. And I was just trying to really notice stuff like that. And I think, yeah, if you want to sit down and write a novel, great descriptions of people I think are helpful. So yeah, sit down and write, and then yeah, go, if you're stuck, go and be really anonymous somewhere and just watch what's going on around you, and write a scene that's going on, you know, if you're in the airport lounge or somewhere, just write that. It means that you're writing something.
I love that idea.
Yeah. I have a different question, not about writing. Would you go to a wedding if you didn't, a wedding where you didn't know anyone other than either the bride or the groom, without a plus one?
I have done that, actually, and I was dreading it, but it was amazing. It was like one of the best weddings I've ever been to, because you're sort of forced to fling yourself into it and just make friends with people. I think, daunting though it may be, I had a really great time and ended up going back to a house party, and yeah, it was a sort of really long night. But I think get stuck in.
I went to one.
Oh, no.
And symbolically, I was the only person sitting opposite no one.
Oh no.
Like on
that's
the end of
bad.
A table.
It was a really long table.
Oh,
I was sitting at the very end, literally opposite no one.
No.
Opposite an empty seat with my back to the bride and groom.
Oh, Natalie.
Because when I went to sit down in the other seat facing them, the woman next to me was like, no, someone's sitting here. And so then I had to sit next to her husband, who she spent the whole dinner eyeballing him, so he
didn't talk
to me.
That's the thing I find really unfair about weddings. The seating plans can make or break it, because if you have
no
a great one
plan.
You have so much fun, and that sets you up for the whole evening. If you had a really bad one, that's sort of, you know, taking the
there was no seating plan, and I got in there last because I was circling the grounds. I had an introvert day, so I was circling the grounds because I didn't want to talk to people I didn't know.
No.
And so I got into the room and everyone had sat down, and that's why I ended up sitting at the very last seat. Yeah. And so I've made a decision. I am not going to a wedding unless I have a plus one.
Okay.
Oh, no, you have to. So I agree with Sophia. It's, if you get a good table with some good people, you can have the most amazing night.
You just never know. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you guys, but I'm really bad now. I feel like I'm 33 and I've got my mates, and I very rarely, you know, mingle outside those mates because we're all busy. We've got stuff on. We don't see our own friends enough, let alone new people. Mm. And I feel like weddings sometimes, you might hit it off with, you know, just...
You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. Okay. Sophia, it's been so lovely chatting to you.
Thank you.
Sophia's book, The Plus One, is out now. Sophia Money-Coutts, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for sharing
it.
With us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Coming up next, it is of course time for our badass balls ups. We're going to be talking about Botox. Should I have it? I'm going to iron out the creases in my forehead as I say that. And loneliness, how to manage it.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
Welcome back to Badass Women's Hour XL with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. And still in the studio with us tonight, we have the fantastic Sophia Bunnycoots. She was going to go and then we've just roped her into Badass Balls Up. So it's all about me this week. It's all about me. So my first question for you ladies is about Botox. So my group of girlfriends, the first of us has had Botox. And when she told us she was doing it, we were all like, no, what are you doing? Don't do it. It's a slippery slope. Stop. And she was like, nope, I'm going for it. I'm doing it. And she went and had it and she's come out and she looks great. She looks really, really great. And we all thought that she was going to look, you know, completely frozen, nothing moving. She just looks like she had a really good night's sleep. And so now, having always been not anti it, but sort of the belief that, quite frankly, my face is fat enough to just plump out the skin anyway, I've started noticing a few little lines down the middle of my forehead. And I'm thinking, should I do it? What do we think?
A couple of questions first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you notice the lines in the middle, in the sort of the brow,
yeah,
before or after she had her
baby? After. Mm-hmm.
After.
Oh, okay.
After.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
First one. Second one, what's the genes like?
Is your mum's got really good skin? The genes are not great. The genes, I mean, like, I've got Irish potato farmer heritage, right? And apologies to the Irish potato farmers out there, but our skin falls off our faces.
Right.
So I do know that my time with it, where it currently is limited, and at some point I'm going to have jowls which basically go down to my knees.
Yeah, because you're aging.
Because I'm aging,
that's,
I mean, yes.
It's called life.
It is called life. But it makes the women in my family look quite sad. Is the only thing.
Maybe they are sad.
Yeah. Yes, true.
But last one. Would you? Is it just your forehead that you'd get Botox in, or would you get fillers and stuff elsewhere?
So fillers really scare me.
Okay.
Really. So basically, I'm a wimp. I need somebody in my group to go and do it first, scope it out. So when my friend Elle goes and gets her fillers, then I'll be like, oh, okay, good. Looking good. I like it. But the people I have seen who I know have had fillers, mm-hmm, it hasn't looked great on. So I'm a little bit, I'm more nervous of them, I would say.
Okay.
But that's an older thing, isn't it? I think you start with Botox, right? And then if you go down that route and then you gravitate to fillers, I feel like.
Leveling
like going
up.
From
leveling
cannabis up. To heroin.
Yeah. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah.
Sophia, what do you think?
I have to.
I just have to say no going from either cannabis or to heroin or back or forth or on any of them. Just FYI.
Yeah. I probably have to confess. Yes, I have had Botox. It was about a year and a half ago that I suddenly thought, oh, my forehead. And I suppose also my crow's feet. And I just thought, oh, God. And I worked at Tatler at the time, a glossy magazine, and a lot of women around me looked amazing. So I went and had a word with our beauty director, and she said, don't worry. And she told me where I should go and pack me off to this amazing place in Chelsea. To this amazing doctor. And I went in. It was actually the day that I went on the first date with my now boyfriend. I went in and you go to these places and they take photos of you with an iPad in really bad lighting and then show you. And she was like, right, this is what I think we should do, and sort of pointed out, you know, the trouble spots as they were. And then quite quickly I was sort of lying down and she was, you know, just doing little pricks, and then off I went, and that was that. So I have to say I'm kind of I sort of hate myself a little bit for doing it, but then once you've had it, you see you look like your friend, you look really great. And I don't think it's the end of the world, is it? I mean, I think there are worse things.
And also I feel
a little bit of Botox,
if we're on a scale, you know, I would get my hair done, I would, you know, get a facial, I get my eyebrows done, you know, I do lots of other stuff.
Yeah.
So is it just an extension of that? Emma, what do you
think? Well, I don't know. For me, I'm like, I will never do it. And half of it is because I have a real problem with putting anything foreign in my body unless it's for like medical purposes.
Yeah, no, I do get that.
The other half of me wants to actually fight it because I kind of feel like it's just playing in to society telling us that we're only of value and we're only worth something if we look young.
Mm.
And also, I think it's a losing battle. Like, I can have Botox now, and then when it wears, like every day I'm aging just like one day at a time, which is really good because I get used to it as it goes. No big shockers.
Not big shock.
Yeah. You know, you could tell that you're aging, but it's a slow process, and you know, my level of acceptance comes along with it. And I feel like I'll have Botox, I'll look great, then it wears off, but I'll look worse, and then I'll be like, oh my God, I've got to have Botox again because I look. And I just want to really accept all my wrinkles. And I think also the older I get, the more I'm a bit like, I'm just going to appreciate being here and being healthy and well. And I just don't want to succumb to that. I really just want to fight it. Even if everybody else around me does it, I feel like as women, we have to be judged on other things other than whether we look young or whether we've got any lines in our foreheads.
I mean, Emma does have fabulous genes, though.
So I was just about to say, this is not part of the argument that you look fabulous anyway. You're 42. And your face there's no wrinkles to worry about. So it's easy to say that.
No, there isn't, but I'm still aging. Like, you know, but this is the other thing as well. I think the reason I look as good as I do for my age is that I've always taken great care about what I put into my body. So, you know me, I don't really drink. Mm-hmm. My diet, I don't eat a lot of sugar. And I'm not like a ninja about stuff, do you know what I mean? But I think from my late 20s, I've always thought that my outer, how I look outer, is largely affected by what I put in. So it's been a combination, and good genes. I do think that, you know, there's that.
Because Mama Sexton looks awesome.
But you know what? If I went out drinking every night, I would not look
fresh.
Good.
We are talking Botox. Would you do it or not? Sophia's a yes. Emma's a no. Nat, where do you stand?
I say, yeah, do whatever makes you happy. Black doesn't crack. So I'm good for like another 10, 15 years before I even need to worry about it. But if I was concerned, I would just do it. I've already said I've had underarm Botox to stop my sweating. The Botox is already in my system, so I can keep going with that. I don't know if I'd have fillers because I don't want to change shape on my face.
Yeah.
But if I needed a little plump and a little tuck, yeah, why not?
Do you think it's the start of a slippery slope? Because this is the other thing. So again, my group of girlfriends that this particular friend sparked this conversation from, we have a running joke that at about 40, we're all going to go on holiday to Brazil and get our boobs lifted. And we're going to go together so we can make it a girl's holiday. Yeah.
I would do that too, by the way. Feel free to come.
Yeah. I wonder, is it like a... Is it a bit of a slippery slope where you do one and that's it, and then you're on the treadmill?
But is it a slippery slope if there are things that you want to get done? So,
but why do you want to get them done?
Because why not?
No, but it isn't why not, is it? It isn't why not. But Harriet has not even mentioned wanting Botox until her mate got it.
This is true.
If your mate didn't have Botox, you wouldn't even be thinking about it.
I know, but nobody wants to be the ugly one of the group, do they?
having Botox has no... Like, it's subtle. Yeah. It's super subtle.
This is... Oh, God, it's peer pressure. That's what it is.
You're a human being. You just want to blend in. We don't like being the black sheep. So if everybody's having Botox... Your mind will go, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I'll get some of that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you can see it with friendship groups, can't you? I mean, yeah. I can definitely see it with mine, and you've seen it with yours, you know, the sort of ripple effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this 100%. Is the other thing, which is also if somebody gets done and it's good, then you don't have to worry about where do I go, because you know.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, to this place.
Yeah.
It's the sort of phone numbers pass around furtively. Oh, I've got I know a great woman. Well, I know a good woman
exactly.
too.
Exactly.
Yeah. We've had a tweet, anonymous tweet, feels very strongly with you, Emma. She's like, no, it's part of getting older. I turned 50 last Saturday. You don't look young. Trust me, you just look frozen.
Weird. Yeah, you look weird. That's always been my thing. You don't, none of this stuff is anti-aging, all this stuff. You don't look younger. You look weird. You look your age because your body's aging. Your body looks older. The way your muscles hang, your skin hangs, your neck, your deck. Like, where does it end?
Well, I mean, it ends with us all in Brazil on the beach with our boob jobs. That's exactly. Where it ends.
But your boobs have got like...
And I think you can do a tuck for the underarm if that's falling a bit. And I think you can do a kneecap tuck if you want to, if that's hanging a little bit. Yeah.
I think spend all that all the money you're going to go and give to these beauty people. Can you go and give them to a therapist? Maybe. Lot longer lasting.
So that's what makes you happy.
Or just good moisturiser.
Good moisturiser. I mean, I do spend a lot of money on skincare.
Just not invasive.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So the jury's still out on Botox. I'm going to think about it, but I will take your point about peer pressure, Emma. I think it's a good point.
You know I know things.
You do. So my second question of this week is, now, we've probably discussed this on the show before. A while ago, I had a sort of emotional affair with somebody that I should not have had an emotional affair with. And in just a horrendous moment of awfulness this morning, whilst I was picking up my dog's poo, my phone somehow managed to call him.
You butt-dialed him.
I don't even know how that's possible because I have an iPhone and I'm not supposed to switch on.
Was it your subconscious butt-dialed him?
No, it was me trying to not drop the poo and the phone in all at the same time. And I obviously hung it up and then he messaged me and I all got a bit spirally. Now, the problem that I have is not really him, that's fine. The problem that I have is that his girlfriend has a very active social media account. And so obviously I was like, well, I'll just go and check that they are still together. Oh, yes, there they are on their mini break at a very expensive hotel with their small baby. Oh, great. Lovely. And it sent me into a real spiral of feeling really lonely.
Aww.
Really lonely. And I don't usually feel lonely. I usually feel like I have a really full life. I've got lots of lovely friends. I have a great job. Lots going on. I have the world's most loving dog. You know, so I don't really feel lonely. But today I felt really lonely and I can't seem to shake it. What should I do?
Questions.
Okay.
Is it lonely or was it an element of wanting that life?
Definitely there's a bit of wanting that life. Mm-hmm. Definitely a bit of wanting that life.
That curated Instagram life. This is the highlights. Yeah. This is what I want people to think my relationship looks like. That life, Harriet?
I mean, yes, obviously. And obviously I know that, you know, that curated relationship is not what that relationship is. Like, yeah. I definitely
it's
know
It's not because he's messaging you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not.
And he's got a small baby.
It's a bad curated life. It's a bad curated life. So I don't want that. But there's definitely a bit of wanting that companionship. And somebody to go to places with and have a bit of a life with, definitely.
When you felt like that, did you immediately think about going online?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Did I immediately go online? Yes. Did I immediately match with some people? Yes. Did I immediately message them? Yes. Did three of them instantly delete my message without so much as replying? Yes.
Yeah, well, that's dating apps, isn't it?
So all of this is an online problem, really, isn't it?
It is an online problem.
Going online, seeing her profile, then going on the apps, and then it's all from that. Yeah. It's
I need
so
a
toxic.
Digital detox.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I think you do.
Because I always think when you have one of those days or one of those moments when you get a bit sort of, I call it squirrely, and you can go through an Instagram spiral and start looking at things that you shouldn't.
And suddenly
think,
it's like 2010.
Yeah, and you're just, and it makes you so low. But I always think, I don't know what you're doing after this, I think it's early nights, like, book with, you know, in bed with a book, and then tomorrow it's always better the next day, and you think, okay, I've allowed myself to be sort of squirrely for a few hours and be low, but that with me anyway, it clears hopefully after not too long, and you go to bed and you, and the next day is better.
I hope so. I think so. I tried to like push the self-care element, but I don't know, it just felt. Ems, do you ever get that?
Yeah, definitely. And but I think what I've learned with my emotions, or like, you know, those low moments, is to really feel it and to like move through that and not to suppress it and to acknowledge that I'm lonely. And, you know, if you're single, it does get lonely. But equally, I try and engage my logic brain to go, OK, well, you can imagine this rose tinted relationship. But I've been in relationships where I've been just as lonely being in a relationship as I am single. And like, I think you just have to balance. I don't know. We always want what we haven't got, and then we can portray what we haven't got as this amazing thing. And, you know as much as anybody, Harriet, that a relationship does have lots of lovely things, but it has some really challenging things. And I think that's the same with single. So being single, and I think move through it, wallow in it for a bit. But tomorrow's a new day. I like Sophie's advice. Yeah.
But that was my thing, the questioning around the digital side of it. I think stepping back from the digital and ultimately what is not real, because they're 2D images of a moment in time, and living in the fullness of the life that you've got, and maybe for tomorrow just really being not just in the emotion, because I'm also a bit like, you know, come on, let's bounce back. Just living in the fullness of the bits you enjoy about your life. So going to your favourite coffee shop and having the cake and the coffee with Blue.
That's,
you know,
nice
hopefully
idea.
If the sun's out, or you're going down the river, just do the bit of your life that really makes you happy. Just indulge in that bit for a little bit of time.
And also remember that being single is very luxurious.
It is very luxurious.
You
can
do exactly what you want when you want. Don't have to share with anybody.
You can watch what you want.
Watch what you want. It's pretty incredible.
That is a good point. Thank you, ladies. It's very cheering. 1, 2, 3, 4 This has been Badass Women's Hour's Best Bits. If you liked it, please do rate, review and subscribe us. We love that. 5 stars. Or come chat to us on social media. You can find us at Badass Women's Hour, HR, at Badass Women's Hour, or come talk to us individually. I'm at Harriet Minter.
At Emma Sexton.
And
at Nat D. Campbell.
And we'll be here again next week, same time, same place.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.